So good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. Just a reminder that we are live streaming this today for our members who are not in the area. And it will be posted on the Florida Community Mindfulness's YouTube channel. So today, our teaching is based on something that's a little different than our usual. Usually we base our teachings, sort of, we might say, on the philosophy, psychology, meditation practices, etc., of Buddhism. But today we are not wandering so far away. And it's interesting to find that very much in our own culture, these teachings that offer a path of transformation and awakening, a path that has a strong ethical or moral vision, is also very much within our own culture, which is good. So my text for today is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. He was an Englishman, I think as many as you know. He lived in the 1800s. One of the great writers of the so-called English-speaking world. And again, a man who had a profound sense of social injustice. He lived at a time in England when there was great disparity of wealth, great disparity of power. And also there was an arrogance among the upper classes that really looked at as working people and poor people as somehow deficient. In many ways. So, not so unusual for today, unfortunately. So this, again, A Christmas Carol, I looked up. There are probably a dozen different movie versions and animated versions, probably even more. I think all of us maybe grew up, watching The Christmas Carol at Christmas time. Probably it's on right now. But often the focus is on, Scrooge as an archetype of the skinflint, and not really focusing on the profundity of his journey that evening, of his awakening. In Buddhist terms, we put a lot of emphasis on awakening, transformation, seeing things as they are. And it's very interesting. While many of us perceive that as a long-term, arduous path in life, it is very interesting that Scrooge's transformation takes place in the course of one evening. He goes to sleep one kind of person, and he wakes up a totally different kind of person, which means there's hope for all of us. So I'm going to, we have about an hour. I don't know how long this will take, but let me tell you the story. The scene opens. We are introduced to Scrooge. He's tight-fisted. He's alone. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say with gladsome looks, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? Will you come see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what time it was. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such place. Even the blind man's dog appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming, would tug their owners into doorways and up courts. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance. And so, once upon a time, a long time ago, the scene opens and Scrooge is in his counting house. Probably like old King Cole, counting out his money. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who in a dismal little cell beyond a sort of tank was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was even smaller, that it looked like only one coal was used, and he wasn't allowed to replenish it because Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room in the office. And he begrudged poor Bob Cratchit, because it's sort of like you're only here to work, you see, and coal costs me money. And so therefore, you know, if I heat your office and give you coal, subsidizing you or something. I mean, you can get a sense of how he saw life. All of a sudden, the door opens and some man crawls, "A Merry Christmas, Uncle, God save you." It was his nephew, the son of his sister. And Scrooge replies, quite famously, "Bah, humbug." And his own nephew said, "Christmas a humbug, you don't mean that." "I sure do," he says. "Merry Christmas, what right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough." Right, so his nephew, who's a pretty intelligent guy, pretty witty, says, "Come then, so why are you being dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough." Again, as if somehow, you know, in Scrooge's view, if you're poor, you have no right to be happy. But obviously, even if you're rich, which was Scrooge's aim in life, he wasn't happy either, which is interesting. "Don't be cross, Uncle." "What can I be," Scrooge says, "when I live in a world with such fools as you? Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer, a time for balancing your books and having every item in them throughout the months dead against you? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on their lips should be boiled in their own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through their heart. He should." You know, so Scrooge is quite clever too, isn't he, in his own way? So I think Dickens was having fun, you know, being both characters. And so his nephew, who's basically a good-hearted guy, he says to his uncle, "There are many things from which I've derived good, but I have not profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I've always thought of Christmas time when it has come round, apart from the veneration due its sacred name and origin, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were their fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it." So in reading about Dickens, it's very interesting. You know, the whole, and again, in a lot of the descriptions in here of food and plenty and gifts and goodness, you know, if you've seen the movies, a lot of that came from Dickens. That up to then, Christmas was more of a religious holiday, and it was kind of a serious thing. And really, Dickens, really, you know, in his descriptions of all the wonderful things, the parties, and as we'll get into, really gave this other, more humanistic opening to Christmas. And he's obviously, he's saying, I think all of you get. I mean, he's saying, isn't it wonderful? There is at least one day a year when human beings open their hearts and notice that all human beings in this world, we're on the same journey together. And then, you know, his uncle invites him to have Christmas dinner with him and his wife. And of course, Scrooge wants nothing to do with it. The door opens. He leaves. The door opens again. And in come two men. And they are asking for Scrooge or Marley. They are, you know, they are good people of the community who are raising monies. And they talk to Scrooge about, you know, liberality at this time of year. At this festive time of year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at this present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessity. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts. Right? So many of you have probably gotten solicitations, both locally and nationally at this time of year, acknowledging there are so many millions, hundreds of millions perhaps, even more, people who are in need at this time. And so Scrooge replies to this ask, are there no prisons? And we know in our own country, poor people are often in prison because of their lack of money. Plenty of prisons, say the gentlemen. And are there no workhouses? Aren't the workhouses in those days poor people were put into workhouses? They are, the gentleman said, but I wish they were not. And the treadmill and the poor law, are they fully enforced? Both very busy, sir. Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them. I'm very glad to hear they're still, you know, going. But under the impression, they said, you know, these poor guys hadn't realized what they had gotten into in coming into Scrooge. You know, they're just probably going from office to office, you know. Said, under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices, obviously, when most people are celebrating and being with family and buying gifts and having some abundance. Those that don't have obviously feel more left out probably than they usually do. So what shall we put you down for? Nothing. You wish to be anonymous. I wish to be left alone. That is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I mentioned, the poorhouse, the prisons. They cost me enough, and those who are badly off, they must go there. But they say many can't go there, and many would rather die than go there. If they would rather die, then let them do it. And decrease the surplus population, which was a popular theory at that time. There's like the population, and then there's the surplus population, the unneeded ones. And so a little more dialogue, and they're saying, but you know, shouldn't you be a little concerned about them? He said, Scrooge says, it is not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen. All right, so we get a sense of him. You know how powerful. It is enough, he says, Scrooge says, for a man to understand his own business and not to fear with other people's. Right? So this is the human being who stands alone in life, totally preoccupied with their own needs, their own wants, their own future, their own, right? And totally cut off, totally alienated, totally disconnected from the whole of humanity, from other people at all, and do not see any commonality, any universality at all in this life. You know, and again, we cannot sit here today in our own country, in our own culture, and say that that is not still very much alive, right? And even more personally, we cannot say, if we are honest perhaps, that seeds of that are still alive in us, right? And it's a real dilemma. How much of our focus in life is to take care of our own business, and how much of our focus in life is to take care of the business, you know, of everyone. Yeah, you know, so they go out, Bob Cratchit, poor guy, you know, is, you know, they have this little dialogue. Scrooge begrudges that not only is Cratchit not working on Christmas, and it implies that in those, remember, those days there were no work laws. So, you know, you didn't have a 40-hour week or weekends off or paid holidays. I mean, that was, so Christmas was the paid holiday. And so Scrooge kind of gives him a dig, and you know how lazy he is, that not only is he not working tomorrow, but he expects to be paid for it. A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must be here the next day, be here all the earlier next morning. And you can see in those days, people who worked for other people were totally at the mercy of their employers. You know, so then, you know, Scrooge goes home, he eats dinner by himself, he walks through the town, you know, people just kind of walk the other way, beggars come up to him, kids sing Christmas carols, you know, he just chases everybody away. Comes home to his house, if you remember, comes to his door, there's like a, you know, a knocker there with a face, and all of a sudden that face looks like his ex-partner Marley's. You think he's had some indigestion. So he gets up, goes to bed. He lives in a, you know, in a big place, you know, big house, but it's all, nothing's in there, right? It's cold, no heat and everything. And all of a sudden, he's in bed, and all of a sudden or just getting ready for bed, and all of a sudden the doorbell rings. But nobody ever comes to his door. He looks out the window. There's nobody there. The bell keeps ringing, and all of a sudden, the ghost of Marley appears. And it looks like Marley. He's sort of somewhat transparent. He's wrapped in chains. And he's got some kind of bandage or something around his head, if I remember. He doesn't look good. I mean, I don't know how ghosts are supposed to look, but he's not a good-looking ghost. And he's got these heavy chains. He will clunk, clunk, clunk. So when Scrooge realized it's not just indigestion that he's having, he falls down on his knees in fear. "Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?" "Man of the worldly mind," replied the ghost, "do you believe in me or not?" "I do, I do. But why do spirits come walk the earth, and why do they come to me?" And again, these are famous lines. The ghost replies, the ghost of Marley. Again, and Marley was very much like Scrooge. I mean, they had met when they were young in business, and they got in business together, and they sort of worked along the same lines. So this is Marley, 5 or 7 years later, saying, "Why do you come?" And Marley says, "It is required of every man and woman that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow beings and travel far and wide. If that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world and witness what it cannot share but might have shared on earth and turn to happiness." I don't need to explain that, do I? It's, again, this other vision of what we're supposed to be doing in this world. Are we supposed to be just staying in our narrow little bubble, personal bubble, family bubble, you know, religious, ethnic, whatever little bubble, class bubble we stay in, neighborhood bubble, or are we supposed to go and journey out? You know, in the Thich Nhat Hanh community, we talk, you know, do not turn away from suffering, but go out and touch suffering wherever it is. And then Scrooge says, "Well, you know, yes, you know, why are you fettered?" And Marley says, "I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will. and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? So this is very, you know, this is like we talk about karma. He's created his own karma. He says, you know, yeah, these outward chains, I chain myself. I can't blame anybody else. These are the chains I forged in life, and now I carry them. And he goes to Scrooge. He said, would you like to know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It is full and heavy as long as this. You have labored at it. It is a ponderous chain. And then they continue to talk. And as they're talking, Scrooge, you know, he says all the right things. He says, but, you know, when Jacob's, you know, very remorseful, but he says, but Jacob, you are always a good man of business. And Marley cries out, business. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Again, very powerful. You know, we all have, you know, our own personal world, right? Our own personal world, our own responsibilities, our duties, you know, our responsibilities to home, family, self, work, right? Then we say, well, that's my kind of personal business. That's his sphere. But he's saying, no. No. Our business is to, you know, our business is to take care of the whole. Right? That's our business. Wherever we show up, you know, our business is to always take care of others, to be open to others, to be responsible for others, universal responsibility, the Dalai Lama calls it. Yeah. And then he says, at this time of year, I suffer most. Why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise man to a poor abode, where there are no poor homes to which its life could have conducted me? And then some more dialogue, and then Marley says, I'm really here to warn you that you have a chance to escape the fate that you see of me. And I am doing my best to procure that for you. So that is why Marley has appeared. Give Scrooge one last chance. He says, you know, I've really been beside you invisibly since I died 7 years ago. But tonight, for some reason, I can become visible. Right? And so I'm here to warn you. There's another way. And then it's interesting. Marley goes over to the window, opens the window, and they look out, and they look out, and Scrooge becomes aware of confused noises in the air, incoherent sounds of lamentation, regret, wailings, inexpressibly sorrowful, self-accusatory, it became like a mourning dirge. And he looked further out. The air was filled with phantoms, wandering hither and thither in restless haste and moaning as they went. Every one of them wore chains like Marley. Some few, and then he says in parentheses, they might be guilty governments, were linked together. None were free. Many had been personally known to Scrooge in their lives. He'd be quite familiar with one old ghost in a white waistcoat with a monstrous iron safe attached to his ankle, who cried piteously at being unable to assist a wretched woman with an infant whom it saw below upon a doorstep. The misery was with them all, clearly, that they sought to interfere with good in human matters, but they had lost all power to do it. So they're ghosts, right? So even though now they are weighted down, by the kind of chains that they have forged themselves. I mean, that's what he sees. This is not just Marley. And they want to do differently, right? They can't. That's what he says. Even though they want to help, they can't. They're invisible. So it's like their suffering is even more. So then Marley basically says to him, you will be visited by three more spirits tonight. So everybody get the scene? Right, so this is the setting. We have this totally self-centered, narcissistic, gain-oriented, materialistic human being who is fundamentally miserable, but thinks he has the right way, thinks he knows the score, right? And is incredibly critical and judgmental of anybody who's not like him, right? Doesn't see life in the same materialistic way or the same gain way as him. It's very powerful. So at midnight, there is, a spirit appears. It was a strange figure, like a child, not so much like a child as like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium which gave him the appearance of having receded from view and being diminished to a child's proportion. So this is the spirit of the past. And you can see he's young, he's old, he's all ages. But the strangest thing about him was from the crown of its head there sprang a bright jet of light by which everything was visible. And that is why on occasion, in its duller moments, it had a great extinguisher for a cap that it could put on it, which it now held under its arm. So even this, though, when Scrooge looked at it with increasing steadiness, was not the strangest quality. That means this light that came out of his head. For now, its belt sparkled and glittered now in one part and now in another, and what was light one instant, another instant was dark. So the figure itself fluctuated in its distinctiveness, being now a thing with one arm, one leg, 20 legs, pair of legs without a head, narrow head without a body, dissolving parts, no outline which could be visible in the dense gloom wherein they melted away. And this was quite wondrous. And then everything would become clear again. So, I mean, my understanding of this, it's sort of like memory. You know, I mean, our memories, sometimes they're distinct, sometimes they're very diffuse. Sometimes we remember this, you know, like we remember parts of memory. Like he says, you know, one arm, one leg, one head, you know, it's like we don't see clearly the whole thing. So it's sort of, you know, that's sort of this figure. He's made up of all, he's the past, and he's just made up of all these elements, sometimes clear, sometimes diffuse, but many, many, many distortions. I think many of us have our own distorted view of our past, of other people's past, because it's very hard to see completely. You know, very few of us have a complete memory of every moment of our life and a complete realistic memory of every situation, every person, right? Every dialogue. Is that true? I mean, we have very, it's all very distorted, and many of us have put it together in its own particular narrative. Which is very incomplete. So he had a special desire, Scrooge, at that moment, to have the. He didn't like the light. He wanted the spirit to put the cap on. And the ghost says, "What? You would so soon put it out with worldly hands? The light I give. Is it not enough that you were one of those whose passions made this cap and forced me through the whole trains of years to wear it low upon my brow?" Right? It's like Scrooge going, "No, I don't want to see so clearly." You know, put the cap on. And no, you know, you're the one who makes me keep the cap on. You don't want to see clearly the causes and conditions, the true reality of your life and past. So he pulled back from wanting to bonnet the spirit. And then he asked the spirit, you know, why are you here? And the spirit said, I'm here for your welfare, for your reclamation. Then he held out his hand and said, come with me. Right? And he was scared he was going to fall because he says, come, you know, they go out the window with me. And he says, don't worry. And they go out into the world. He was conscious of 1,000 odors floating in the air, each one connected with 1,000 thoughts, hopes, joys, cares, long forgotten, long forgotten. The ghost says, your lip is trembling. What is that upon your cheek? And Scrooge is beginning to remember things. Strange that you have forgotten for so long. And again, he's as they begin to move now through his life, he assures him that all these things are the shadows of things that have been. They have no consciousness of us. And so this is, again, I think what unfolds here, I won't go through it all, is so important. You know, whether it's for each of us or everybody we're with or the world or anybody in the world, we only see them as they are now. But to really understand somebody, we have to know what? All the causes and conditions that have produced them. Nobody just, you know, none of us, nobody in our life and nobody in the world just are as they are right now. Everybody was created by the causes and conditions of their life. And if we don't understand that, we'll never understand how to really help people or help this world if we don't see the causes and conditions that have created them. So we see Scrooge, right, this reprehensible character to most of us. It could be some people in our world who like him, you know. I won't name anybody. You know, but there could be people who like this type of person. But then we go back and we see what created Scrooge, right? And we find out that his mother died in childbirth, giving birth to him. His father was so distraught, you know, Ebenezer just always reminded him, the father, and so he sent him away to boarding school. You know, and he lived at boarding school, and he was lonely, and other kids, you know, are visited, and other kids go home for the holidays. He's always alone, right? A sad, lonely, unlovable boy, right? And then we, we see his sister shows up that he was very close with and says her father's had a change of heart. And this is like he's already a teenager, come home. And then we see Scrooge has some good years, right? He's returned to his family. And then he finds his first employment with Fezziwig. And Fezziwig is a man of business, but he's very jovial. He's very happy. And strangely, he wants all his employees to be happy. So he creates a very positive environment, pays them well, very kind, very good, takes good care of them. And we see Scrooge is happy. He meets a young woman. He falls in love. They're planning to be married. But then his sister dies in childbirth. And I think this reawakened with him those negative seeds of pain within himself. And then we see him very slowly, even though he begins as a clerk, he very, you know, like a lot of people, his aspiration in life is to gain. Right? And we see him more and more living for money. Living for gain. And here's a little thing where, the ghost kind of needles him because when they see Fezziwig and all the happiness he brings people, And the ghost says, ah, so what? You know, he's just bringing a few people happy. So what? But Scrooge says, it isn't so what. It's important. It's a Scrooge now defending generosity or defending Fezziwig. And he says, it isn't that. But you see, Fezziwig has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say his power lies in words and looks and things so slight and insignificant that it's impossible to add and count them up. You know, actually, he says the happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. Something's beginning to awaken, right? You know, and he sees, wow, Fezziwig, even though it wasn't like he gave everybody tons of money, you know, but just in the way he was with people, brought great happiness and meaning to people's life. And then we see an interchange between him and his fiancée, and basically she's there to break up with him. I did say that his sister died in childbirth, right? And then now she breaks up with him, even though they've been engaged for several years. But she says, you know, I've been displaced by another idol, a golden one. And she says some interesting things. She said, because when they met, they were both poor. And she says, that which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. How often and keenly I've thought of this, I will not say. I've thought of it many times, and now I can release you. So she says, you know, and I think this is so important in relationships. She says, you know, when we first came together, we had a common vision. We shared a common aspiration. But she said, we have what was once one has now become two. Right? And so she breaks off with him, which is really sort of, and he's disappointed, right? He's hurt. But he doesn't make any attempt to stop her or change her mind, because he knows in his heart that she is right, that he has changed, and that the most important thing in his life is his own gain. And then... He goes on to see what happened to his fiancée. She married. She has now a big family. And he, you know, the spirit, just to really give it to Scrooge, takes him to her house now at Christmas. And she's with kids and everybody's happy. And it's a big, you know, festivity. Just kind of making Scrooge feel even more pain than he's felt already as he's reviewed his life. And Scrooge says, spirit, remove me from this place. This is the place now of seeing his fiancée's new home. I told you these were the shadows of the things that have been, that they are what they are. Don't blame me. Remove me. I can't bear it. And he turned upon the ghost, and seeing that it looked upon him with a face in which some strange way there were fragments of all the faces that had been shown him, he started wrestling with it. He says, leave me, take me back to my home, take me back to my bed, haunt me no longer. In the struggle, in which the ghost didn't resist him at all, Scrooge observed that its light was burning high and bright. Right? The light on Scrooge's past, on his karma, on all the conditions was now bright, right, for Scrooge. And he was not happy. Dimly connecting this with its influence over him, he seized the extinguisher cap and pressed it down upon its head. The spirit dropped beneath it so that the extinguisher cap covered its whole form. But even though Scrooge pressed down with all his force, he could not hide the light that streamed from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. And I think that's very meaningful, isn't it? You know, once we've begun to awaken, once we are willing to begin to shine the light on ourselves, You know, we're always great at shining the light on others. But once we're willing to begin to shine the light on ourselves, our own causes and conditions, our own life, you know, there's a part of us that would like to extinguish, right? Turn away, denial, we call it. But yet, what it's implying here, even though, you know, Scrooge is doing his best to extinguish it, he can't. The light of awareness has been lit. Then later that evening, he's visited by the spirit of Christmas present, who, as you remember, takes him on a journey, right? And he goes around the world, and he sees what's going on, and he visits the home of Bob Cratchit and his family, and he comes to, and he visits his nephew's home, and the ghost takes him all around. He takes him into miners' homes and lighthouse keepers' homes and workers' homes, and he takes him everywhere, and he gives him a, you know, again, he is not, Scrooge has not been present to life at all. And so he takes him on this, you know, the good and the bad. You know, we don't have a lot of time. There's an interesting interchange when he appears at his nephew's house, and they're talking about Scrooge, and he says, "I'm sorry for him, but I can't be angry with him, even if I try. Who suffers by his ill will, his ill whims? Himself, always." Very insightful, his nephew. And then later on, he says also, I think, a very meaningful thing. He says, even though he's such a miserable person, you know, why I keep showing up there and keep saying positive things to him and inviting him for Christmas and wishing him well and all this stuff, he says, he may rail at Christmas till he dies, but he can't help thinking better of it. I defy him if he finds me going there year after year in good temper and saying, "Uncle Scrooge, how are you?" If it only puts him in the vein to leave his poor clerk 50 pounds, that's something. And I think I shook him up yesterday. I mean, I think that's meaningful because, you know, many of our actions for the good, even in the smallest things, of just even to a stranger, to be kind or nice or open or, you know, we don't know the effects, do we? And that's what he's saying. He said, I may never reap anything from being nice to him and wishing him, but maybe he'll plant some seeds that maybe he'll leave his clerk, Bob Cratchit, when he dies, you know, something. And that's, I think, you know, another very Buddhist teaching, which is, you know, we're not attached to outcome. You know, we practice generosity, we practice goodness just for the sake of doing it. We don't know what the effects will be, do we? And we don't need to be concerned. We need to just be present to our own desire to be goodness. And again, they wander about, they see everything, and just before he leaves, Scrooge looks at him. He's looking at the spirit's robe, and he says, "I see something strange sticking out from under your robe. Is it a foot or a claw?" And the spirit pulls back his robe, and under, you know, it's a big robe, and he sees at his feet two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. And the ghost says, "Look here. Look down here." They were boy and girl, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish. When graceful youth should have filled out their features and touched them with its freshest tints, they looked aged and pinched, twisted. No change, no degradation, no perversion of humanity at any grade through all the mysteries of wonderful creation, as monsters half so horrible in dread. Scrooge pulls back. He tried to say something nice, but the words choked, because he knew it was a lie. And he says to the spirit, "Are these children yours?" And the spirit says, "They are man's, and they cling to me, appealing. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both in all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy. Boy's ignorance. For on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Right. Which again is so meaningful. You know, we're all interconnected. Right? And if we turn our back from our fellow beings and let them live lives of degradation, right? It will come back to haunt us because they are part of their society. You know, and we pretend that they're separate from us. But often the cause of their acting out and doing sort of antisocial things in life is because they're not properly socialized by our society. We don't take care of them. We don't nurture them. We don't make sure their needs are met. We don't make sure their education, you know what I'm saying? And then, and Scrooge says, you know, like he says, isn't anybody taking care of them? Aren't there any refuges and resources for them? And the spirit says, again, turning Scrooge's own words, are there no prisons for them? Are there no workhouses? Very powerful, right? Yeah, now, sort of as this one fades, the last one appears. A phantom, no longer a spirit, a phantom. Slow, grave, silent. It seemed to scatter gloom and mystery, shrouded in darkness. Face and all its form was concealed, except it was just an outstretched hand. So this is, in Buddhist terminology, this is impermanence and death. Right? This is what awaits all of us. Every human being will die, but because of impermanence, we do not know when that will be. Right? That's what the phantom is pointing at, which is very powerful. I think it's just fascinating that this is the, you know, because he could have gone lots of ways, because it's like this, it is really, you know, what gets us to really, in a significant way, want to change, right? Because we could always postpone it, couldn't we? Well, after I retire, then I'll change. Or after I get this, then I'll be good. Or then after I'll think of, you know what I mean? But in the face of impermanence, and especially death, we realize if we want to change, if we want to turn our life around, we can only do it now. And that's, I think, the message. And Scrooge says, are you the ghost of Christmas yet to come? And, you know, well, he keeps pointing. and Scrooge says, ghost of the future, I fear you more than any specter I've seen tonight. But I know your purpose is to do me good, and I hope to be another man and live with another man from what I was. I'm prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? He just points. And he leads him, and basically he leads him through conversations that people are having about somebody dying, not a very nice guy dying. These are all business people. He takes him to I guess we'd call it now a pawn house, where there are these three people, two of them washerwoman and like a maid, and the other one is like an undertaker, all bringing things that they've obviously taken off the dead person and out of the dead person's house, like the sheets, the bedclothes, the drapes on the wall, I mean, anything they could. And as he's doing it, he realizes those are all his things. And the person that all these businessmen were talking about who had died friendless was him. And then he takes them along and different things. Tiny Tim is dead. Remember Tiny Tim? I didn't talk about him, Bob Cratchit's son, who was so sickly that he's died. We visit the Cratchit home and see their great sadness at his death. And then finally he takes them to a graveyard and points to a stone. And Scrooge says, before I draw nearer, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may or might be? Very important, right? So we each have our kind of karmic trajectory, our own causes and conditions that have brought us to the day. And like Dickens, obviously, Buddhism does not believe in fate, right? It believes in causes and conditions. So no matter where we are today, we can always change our trajectory by changing the actions of our body, speech, and mind. So he's asking a very, it's like he sees everything that's happened, right? All this death and dun-dun-dun. Now he sees his own death. And he goes, is this like in stone? Or, is there some flexibility here? He's asking. And still the ghost points downward. Scrooge says, men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered, they must leave. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus. Say it is thus. And when he sees his name written on the stone, he clutches the robe of the phantom and says, Spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, please have your nature intercede for me. Pity me. Assure me that I may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. And it said, then the hand of the phantom that was pointing so strongly begins to waver a little bit, tremble. And Scrooge says, I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year. I will live in the past, the present, the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writing on this stone. Finally, he's clinging to this, and all of a sudden the phantom begins to dissolve, and Scrooge realizes he is quite vigorously clutching the bedpost of his own bed. So now we've had, I think over this whole night we've had, people think of awakening like a one-time experience, but I think what we've had over this course is Scrooge's awakening, right? He's awakened to the causes and conditions of his own life. He's awakened sort of to really the goodness that was in him when he was younger, right? He now sees that is there. And also the voyaging in all the ways that he's voyaged has awakened in him a real sense of goodness and concern for his fellow man, et cetera, et cetera. And the purpose of life and being happy and felt, all the good stuff. He's ready. So he's kind of had his awakening, and now he has this transformative moment. And again, it's sort of like, people who've had near-death experiences or other kinds of things, it's like, right? You think it's all over, but all of a sudden there's a reprieve, right? And his reprieve is, I'm alive. But I'm alive with all this experience and knowledge that I've gained in the evening. Oh, he says, I live in the past and present. My Jacob Marley, heaven, Christmas time be praised. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, praise. He says, I don't know what to do. He's laughing, crying in the same breath. He's just, I'm as light as it's funny, you know, if you read in Zen or other traditions, kind of people's awakening experience, they're very much like this. There's a sense of freedom, the sense of lightness, as if all the weight that they've been carrying, you know, burdened by, is just totally lifted from them. He says, I am as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy New Year. You know, and he's just a madman. And he, you know, and he starts laughing and laughing. And then, you know, if you remember the story, he just kind of runs like a madman and, you know, go around and does good everywhere. Sends some food to Bob Cratchit's house, goes to his nephew's Christmas party. He's in the street. He runs into those two men, remember, that who had tried to solicit money. They kind of back away from him when they see him coming. He embraces them. He asks forgiveness. He makes a big pledge. It's all good. He even gives Bob Cratchit a raise and apologizes for the way he's treated him. And it ends saying, and Scrooge was better than his word. Which is a good reminder to all of us that we be better than our words. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became a good friend, as good a master, as good a man, as the good old city knew, or any good old city, town, or borough in the whole world. Some people laugh to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them. There may be people, as we change, people may not, I don't know if they'll laugh at us, but they may not be very supportive of us, or think we've gone off the deep end, or you know what I'm talking about, people. So he let them laugh, and he little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter at the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes and grins as have the malady in less attractive form. So it's sort of like, well, if I make them happy, I'm happy too. In his own heart, he only laughed, and that was quite enough for him. And he had no further intercourse with spirits or phantoms, but he lived according to the total abstinence principle. I'm not sure what that is, but I guess maybe abstain from everything that wasn't good and wholesome. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well. If any man alive possessed that knowledge, may it be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone. So that is the Dharma of Scrooge, which I suggest, he really just has many wonderful truths for all of us that transcend the Christmas time.